The Heart of Danger by Michael D. Cooper. Part 1. Under the Red Sun. Chapter 6. First Mission Accomplished.
But they're not alive, are they, Eldest? Asked Mark. They're not
alive. No, Starman Seton. The words were born directly in Mark's mind. The sensation was disconcerting. But they retain the thought patterns of those of the first races who made them. They have the ability to protect themselves and to replicate themselves if conditions make it possible for them to do so. For the first races, these are roughly similar to what you call robots in your own culture. With a shudder, Mark remembered the android that had masqueraded as Steve Cliff while it was a servant of Banzoman. Yes, the androids of your manufacture are similar in kind to these creatures, though the Griegels, as you call them, are much more capable. Mark and the others looked down at the gleaming creatures that were crowded at their feet. The big Starman could feel his hair prickle slightly as he considered the immeasurable age of, he didn't know how to think of them, machines seemed too far small a word. They were completely unmoving, as if they were waiting for a command. "Well, I'm rather nonplussed about this," interjected Montezuma Fly, after a short silence. "This is the first time I've seen Griegels so quiet. Not that I come here to visit often. Maybe just—his voice faded off into nothing. Like the Starmen, he realized that something was happening. There was nothing to see or hear. It was just a feeling. Like static electricity in still air before a thunderstorm. "Look here," whispered Joe, lifting his right hand a little to point. The two humans and the Amanians followed his gesture and saw one or two silver shapes toward the back of the crowd move slightly. "I," began Montezuma with a slight catch in his voice, "I hope the janitor isn't going to take the Griegels away with him. Once again his voice ran down into nothing. "You may return to your home." The janitor's words came into their minds almost like the breaking of an enchantment. "I will be here for some time. There is no need for you to wait. When I am ready, I will inform you." The four men looked at each other wordlessly, then quietly walked to their ship. In minutes they had landed on Montezuma's castle and returned to Fly's workshop, placing their boots and helmets in the vestibule as before. No one said anything. After a moment's awkwardness, Fly gently lifted Howard from where he was curled up on the top of the closest rock polisher and offered him to Sidervo to hold. The Amanian's face leaped into alarm. "Go ahead," said Joe with a smile. And Mark nodded. Carefully treating the animal as if it were made of spun glass, Sidervo reached out his arms and clumsily took hold of the creature. "Like this," said Joe, holding his arms in place as if he were holding a baby. With ungainly movements, the Amanian shifted around until the Koalang settled into a comfortable position. He was deeply moved. "No one from my planet," he said, "has held or even seen a living animal since..." His emotions made him tongue-tied. "You like that, don't you, Howard?" murmured Montezuma with tender affection. "You're special now. Yes, you're special. You're making someone very happy. You know that, you little scallywag." He ran his fingertips soothingly over the animal's head. Turning to the others, he said, "I'll be back in a few minutes. Make yourself comfortable." Their host left the room. 15 minutes later, he returned carrying two small boxes, one on top of the other. "Take a look inside here, Sidervo," he said. He set the boxes down and removed the lid from the one on the top. Inside were six tiny koalangs, each no more than a few inches long. "These are for you, my gift to you and your people." Sidervo was speechless. His mouth opened, but he couldn't say anything. Montezuma removed the top of the second box and said in a matter-of-fact voice to smooth over the Amanian's discomfiture, "And here's some stuff you'll need to take with you. Food they like, and all that."
Hours went by while the four men talked about the care of the Koalangs and how they would fit into the community of Imlah Teltani. Mark and Joe felt that they learned more about ordinary Mannian life and culture in that conversation than they had in any of the formal classes or social contacts they'd had since they first met the Mannians. The conversation was so pleasant, and the bonds between the friends were being made so tight, that the janitor's voice was completely unexpected. "Return to Adamant. I am ready to depart." When they approached the janitor, they noticed that all the Griegels but two were gone. "Where are the Griegels?" asked Vly, with a note of apprehension. "They will remain on this asteroid, Montezuma Vly," said the janitor. "They have already returned to their homes. These two, however, will come to Tharsos with the Starman and Sidervo. Please take charge of them now. I believe I have found the knowledge the Griegels had that is most needed for the present. It has been placed into these two creatures. They will eventually accompany me to Mars. I thank you for your hospitality and your assistance. Farewell." And with that, the janitor was gone. After another meal on the castle, Mark, Joe, and Sidervo took affectionate leave of Montezuma and Lily. Sidervo was effusive in his thanks for the gift of the baby Koalangs. Now, don't mention it, Sidervo. You're doing us a favor. If they stayed here, there'd just be an even bigger number of the rascalians underfoot all the time, leaping and flying about while we're trying to get our work done. No, we should thank you for taking them off our hands. Let your little Mannian kids enjoy these botherations. I just wish I could be there to see the children when they first lay eyes on them. Joe and Mark never told Sidervo that Koalangs were the beloved pets of lonely asteroid miners, and that Montezuma could have taken the litter to Yellow City on Ceres and sold them for a considerable sum. During the journey back to Tharsos, Sidervo kept nearly constant watch on the Koalangs to make sure they were thriving. Joe tutored him in the care of the animals until Sidervo felt confident enough to continue on his own. Over dinner one evening, Mark broached a subject he'd been thinking about off and on for some time. "Doesn't it feel strange to have the janitor reading your thoughts and communicating directly into your mind?" Joe put his fork down and patted his lips with his napkin. "Now that you mention it, it does make me feel a little bit, well, invaded, I guess. But I just felt as though I were an inferior kind of life, and that he had kind of, I don't know, a right or at least a necessity to communicate the way he does. But it does give me the willies to have words appear in my mind without coming through sound in some way, though. It rather makes my brain itch." "What are willies?" asked Sidervo. "How can your brain itch?" "It just means it feels very strange, Sidervo," said Joe. Sidervo nodded. "I wonder what kind of life he is," mused Mark out loud. "He's humanoid in shape like us, but to live at the temperature he does, around 600 degrees, he's obviously not a water-based entity." "His life is sulfur-based," asserted Sidervo. The Starman's jaws dropped. "Sulfur?" gasped Joe. "Yes, sulfur, liquid sulfur," said the Mannian. "Sulfur?" repeated Mark. "With a melting point of 235 degrees and a boiling point of 832.5 degrees, I guess that fits the temperature range, but sulfur? When life was first conferred in the galaxy, it was in the hottest star systems. The universe has cooled since then, but the first races thrive in the heat of the first creation of life. The hottest stars are the shortest lived. It is for that reason that the janitor said that his race has moved his planet from sun to sun several times." "How do you know all this, Sidervo?" asked Mark. "We learned it from the Alzenta generations ago. It is among the easiest knowledge to collect from them." "What happened to the first races?" Sudervo's lips tightened a little and his brow furrowed. We don't know. We could read only the surface knowledge from the Alzenta, only the most basic scientific facts. Beyond that is mystery. The janitor must know, of course, but it is a little daunting, don't you think, to ask him about such matters?
I know what you mean, said Mark. What seems like a very logical question rather fails on your lips when you approach him. If he is aware of what is on our minds, he knows what we want to ask even before we put it into words, and he is not answering. I have a feeling that he is operating on a level too high for me to understand, and that when he communicates with us, it is almost an effort on his part to slow down or descend or empty himself somehow in order to address us. Joe nodded. The lanky starman had even forgotten to eat when the conversation took this turn. Is he immortal? The question, once it had been uttered, was suddenly frightening to him. No, answered Sudervo, I am sure not, but he can choose the time of his death, and if he or his kind decide to live for millions of years, they may do so without violation of the natural order. It is the prerogative of the first races. The Xenobots, who are of the first races themselves, are wearing out due to their corruption. They are grasping life now with desperation, and because of that they are losing it into the grisly decline we have seen ourselves, or so it seems to me.
Do you know this for sure, Sudervo? Asked Mark.
It's a good guess, Mark, but I think it is a good one, based on what we do know. The Amanian ship docked into the main hangar of Tharsos with its mission accomplished. Sudervo proudly and excitedly unloaded the Koalangs and brought them into Olivanda. Among the Amanians they created even more of a stir than the Griegels that the starmen carried in. The two Griegels had been as silent and unmoving as statues from the time Mark and Joe had gingerly picked them up from the service of adamant. After the starmen had settled into their quarters and rested a little, they came into the common room where the Amanians spent much of their free time. When they walked in, they saw Pleera sitting comfortably.
Pleera, they exclaimed together. She came to her feet and greeted the starmen warmly.
Are you all right now? Asked Joe.
Yes, Joe, she said, her eyes sparkling with their accustomed liveliness.
I am fully recovered and eager to see Ossian fully repaired. I understand we have an exciting mission ahead of us.
How are the repairs coming along? Asked Mark.
Pleera smiled wryly, giving evidence of barely contained enthusiasm. There is still at least a month's worth of work to be done. We must chafe, but what can we do? I'm afraid I do not have my share of characteristic Amanian patience.
A woman after my own heart, asserted the blonde starman. At least we starmen get to go on another mission while you have to wait.
Ah, yes, to retrieve the key of Tharsos. I wish I could go along.
Can you? Joe burst out eagerly.
Eli, I cannot, Joe, said Pleera with a grimace. I am commander of this ship, after all, and must remain to oversee the repairs and plan for our incursion into Xenobot territory. You will be going with Zizaran, Sotek, and Raphon Dorn.
I like Zizaran, said Mark, and look forward to meeting Raphon Dorn.
Do you know when we are scheduled to launch?
That is for Richard Starlight to tell you, said the woman with a smile, smoothing her beautiful dark hair with both hands. Two strands on either side of her face were confined by silver spiral bands adorned with tiny red jewels. But I can tell you that Starman Foster has been back on Ossian for 3 days. Your Star Ranger is docked in the second hangar. I doubt that he and your ship can be kept back from action for very long. She smiled again, and her eyes twinkled.